it's we can intellectualize, the idea there's no possible human realistic way to meet everybody else's needs and expectations. It's setting a standard for yourself that you'll constantly be putting yourself in jeopardy to try and meet that.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the ADHD Eavesdrop, where you can be a butterfly on the wall and listen in on my conversations. Today, we have Jen Kreiner back from Montana. I'm so excited. And we're going to really delve into a topic that I think a lot of people don't think about often enough, and that is ADHD in the workplace. And so we're going to talk about how ADHD can affect the workplace for employers and employees. We're also going to throw some strategies in there for you. And I just want to welcome you back, Jen. I'm so excited to have you. And I'm really excited about this topic because I know that I have worked with people in the workplace before and it can make huge differences. So welcome back.
Thanks, Janine. I appreciate, as always, the invitation to be on your podcast.
So Jen, I know that this is kind of become your niche, your area of expertise when it comes to coaching. And you've done a lot of work with businesses and talked with businesses and corporations about supporting their employees with ADHD. Tell me a little bit about what does ADHD, what problems does it cause in the workplace?
I would start with the idea that we're living in a time when the hustle culture in the workplace is a culture that values performance over well-being for employees. And so often, because that is a standard that exists and that is modeled by leadership, that employees tend to, who have ADHD, often fall into a cycle of high achievement and burnout. And so in that cycle, it's an expense to them because they're high function performers. And under a prolonged period of pressure and stress, they are meeting these external priorities, which often exceed their realistic capacity, the scope of their work, the scope of their job description, taking on marginal functions versus their essential focus. And it just leads to self-neglect. And so as you approach this edge, you're going through the motions and don't even notice moving into this part of the cycle where you burn out, which is a chronic state of mental, emotional, and physical exhaustion. And so this is where you see, procrastination that you just really can't understand. You begin to shut down and disconnect from others around you and from yourself. And it just ends up not being a very efficient way to live. And it takes a lot. It's a very reactive cycle. So it takes a lot to get out of it. So the work that I do with folks is around inviting new practices into their life, building skills so that they can have, still have that same cycle with high achievement and high function, but they invite different practices so that they can maintain their efficiency.
Mm-hmm. And burnout with ADHD, folks, is pretty common when it comes to the workplace, because oftentimes it takes us, three or four times as much energy to complete a task as somebody else. I know burnout got me at the end because it was more than I had the capacity for. And I'm wondering, as you say this, if I had pursued accommodations or done some other things at work, if maybe I could have avoided a little bit of that burnout.
Yeah, and therein lies the initial problem is that with underdeveloped executive functioning, which is a part of our symptoms, is that self-monitoring, that ability to see things happening and then make changes for the future and to have different outcomes, that just doesn't exist. And so we have to build that skill up. And so in understanding that we're in these unuseful patterns or unuseful cycles, to reach out for support. And many individuals that I've worked with, like self-advocacy is a really challenging uncomfortable space to take up. And so in reaching out for accommodations, you can get, you know, support in different ways. So just to go back, ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, provides for individuals who have invisible disabilities. So when we talk about neurodiversity, a neurodivergent individual, somebody with autism, ADHD, learning disabilities, anxiety disorders. And so you are afforded, when you disclose your diagnosis to your employer, to request reasonable accommodations, which can be anything from modifying your job description, modifying your work environment to meet your specific and unique needs. And so also coaching can be a request if it is not an undue hardship or financial hardship to the organization. They can meet that employee's request. And so the work that I do with individuals is to support them out of the gate, even giving them a template for the proposal for coaching services, but also going into helping them assess, helping them see those patterns and where certain other accommodations can alleviate challenges, such as with communication needs or access, environmental stimulation, overload. So yeah, there's a number of ways to support yourself. And again, it's just sitting in the discomfort of advocating for yourself.
So when you advocate for yourself, who do you go to? Do you go to your supervisor? Do you go to human resources? Who do you talk to about maybe getting some accommodations?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the very first should be your direct supervisor. And the direct, there's usually a line of communication, but having that conversation, because when you disclose it, your direct supervisor is gonna know and be aware, because if they have to provide certain changes, then they'll be a part of that. And so it should be this interactive, mutual conversation, negotiation based. It's not me versus them. And so that also brings up that it's not always a safe environment to disclose your disability. And so many people are very aware of bias or open discrimination that already exists. And so it's a scary thing. So it has to be an individual's choice to discern if they feel safe enough, if the culture of their organization is safe enough to allow for them to disclose their diagnosis. Because accommodations are ultimately, it's like taking medication. It levels the playing field. It does not create an advantage. And so it's in building those additional skills on top of having the accommodation is where we find our best processes and systems for ourselves, so that we have and can maintain balance and wellness.
And so I'm thinking about like specific examples of when I was working in an office atmosphere of things that I, at the time, a lot of them I didn't realize had to do with ADHD, but the inability to organize my thoughts, my tasks, those types of things got worse as the burnout got worse. And forgetting meetings, being late for meetings, all of that stuff, I remember really being a problem with me. Time management, really, really threw me off, especially toward the end of my career. But also like some of the emotional aspects of ADHD really affected some of my relationships at work, that I didn't realize were being affected. What are some like examples that you have heard or that you've seen of people struggling with at work?
Yeah, those are all great examples. So executive functioning is your organization planning, prioritization, time management, task initiation, emotional regulation. And so I agree, and I have seen things around that for my experience as well. But to talk specifically about emotional regulation and to go back to burnout is that burnout occurs when we're chasing goals without rest. So if you're constantly producing, performing, achieving in your life, whether personal, professional, you're just on the go and you're just a human doing as opposed to inviting any space where you're a human being, you're going to move into that state of burnout, which in burnout, we neglect ourselves, we neglect our basic needs, sleep, quality nutrition, physical movement, connection with others, all of that is so important for our cognitive functions. And so when you get dysregulated in that place, it's just like kind of like this domino effect. But so rest, the definition of rest is activities that we pursue that are not performance-based and they recharge us. So when we invite those daily practices into our life, that starts to create the space, the balance that we need in order to maintain high function. And so when I do presentations or outreach or work with clients, it's teaching them how to habit stack, right? Like there's something that you're going to do every day. You're already doing it. And so it's just creating new rituals where you're adding in pieces like how to, you know, reset your nervous system as stressors accumulate throughout the day. That just is stored in us, in our bodies, if we don't take the time to actually process them. So when we invite a reminder every few hours to just sit with kind of the email that came in that gave us feedback that maybe felt disappointing, or the tone from a coworker as they said something when we passed them in the hall, the communication you had with your partner right before you left the house that just was unsettling. All of these are going to stay with you and accumulate throughout the day. So if you give yourself space, build in these small rituals, whether it's just closing your eyes and being with those experiences and breathing through them, taking a 10-minute walk to just, it's basically like stopping the input and the output. I'm not taking any information in. I'm not putting anything out. I'm just gonna, you know, take some space and some time to reset my nervous system. That's a big one for emotional regulation.
So I'm wondering, when you go to your supervisor or your HR department, you ask for accommodation, would that accommodation then be like more frequent breaks to allow for that time to do that during the day?
Yep. And, you know, it's so interesting. We don't really live in a world where people take cigarette breaks anymore, but that was just the, an automatic, yep. You know, if you're a smoker, you go take it. It's the same thing, but it's just 5 minutes, you know, with yourself, whether it's breath work, going to the bathroom to shake it off, just shaking off like the bad juice that's accumulated.
The body shaking.
Yeah. It makes a difference. Writing, you know, just writing a thought stream down, a thought download, just to externalize the things that have been with you. But yes, so in terms of your, you know, a couple key areas, so environmental and sensory, this can be your work environment, noise canceling headphones. That's something that I got for myself, you know, not realizing that I was so distracted by just hearing keyboards clicking away. Lighting, if that's an issue. So open concept can be really challenging for people. If you need a separate workspace, a private workspace, you can request that. Often moving into remote work, working from home so that you can accommodate your sensory needs there. But then in terms of flexibility, having a flexible schedule, so not necessarily needing to start at the crack of the whip or whatever that looks like for you. So your request is going to be specific to what you know about yourself and what your needs are. And so those structured breaks, building in structured breaks to your day, that can be a request specifically as well. If it's okay, I'll just go on. So communication is central to everything about a culture at your workplace that is supportive, because it's leadership looking for that input from you. They want to understand what's happening for you so that they can accept the thing that they cannot see, that invisible disability. When we see somebody in a wheelchair, we hold the door for them. We immediately have an understanding and an acceptance of their need to have access and accommodations. We automatically are able to give compassion because we can see their need. And so that's therein lies the challenge. And when I work with leadership, it is this process of truly having employee engagement be this mutual relationship, because their goal is to truly understand their needs.
And so that brings us to the part about the employers. You know, if you're an employer of somebody with ADHD, what are some important things for you to know?
Yeah. Well, so in terms of all of the systems from the time that we're hired, you know, we're looking at recruitment, onboarding, performance management, retention, professional development. In all of those areas, it is a neuro-inclusive culture applies to all of those systems. And so it's creating an environment that is inclusive and accepting, and that is going to foster safety so that person can be their authentic selves. They don't have to mask, which is a very exhausting way of hiding neurodivergent traits to fit that societal norm, that social and societal norm. It is being willing to look at unconscious bias. I mean, we are comfortable with what we know. And it's just when we're familiar with something, it's obvious and it's a normal human experience to have these biases because we just don't know or understand. It just hasn't been our experience. And so being able to evaluate and recognize unconscious bias or discrimination, being able to fill skill gaps with education, both for the individual who has ADHD or the workforce, to help them understand diversity, equity, and inclusion, and etiquette practices. And then really looking at your core values, because an organization is going to have these core values that are their guiding principles for their operations. Your cultural values are what your people adopt in those operations, both internally with each other and externally to your stakeholders or your clients. Being very direct, being very clear, concise with communication, feedback, all of that is very important if you're a manager or a leader, and not leaving things to be ambiguous. You know, it's just having this matter-of-fact, straightforward approach to communication. Again, looking at what an individual needs and supporting them in that way. So it's when I see a performance issue as a leader who accepts all diverse thinkers, if there's a performance issue, I meet it with curiosity to understand what's going on versus a performance plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the difference, is it's somebody who is invested because they truly believe that that individual is talented, has so many strengths. It's a strengths forward approach to seeing people in general. And I know that if something's going on, that I want to get curious about it and I want to offer support, as opposed to whatever is typical in certain structures.
I'm thinking of another example, because working in the area that I worked in, because I was in special education, we were used to accommodating people for everything. And, you know, so it wasn't a big deal when you would say, can I do this or can I do that? But one of the biggest things that I did to accommodate myself, and I didn't have to go to HR, I didn't have to do anything except for let my supervisor know that I was going to do it. We had an open door policy, so our office doors were supposed to always be open. However, I couldn't concentrate with the sounds that came from the main office area. There was a lot going on. And so I was able to shut my door and put a sign on it that said, if you need to come in, please knock. So I was still saying, you can come in, but I have to have my door closed, right? Yeah, or it said, you know, I'm in a meeting, you know, please shoot me a text or whatever. I didn't have to go to HR to ask for that. I just had to, you know, say this would make my life a lot easier and make it easier for me to do my job. And my boss, being enlightened and being open to those things and understanding those things, was like, yeah, absolutely, you can do that. So does it always have to be like a, but you know, a written plan of accommodation?
Yeah, so that's a great transition to, for folks who do not want to disclose their diagnosis, they just want to keep it to themselves and learn how to support themselves. That is an example of just having like communication with your boss about things that you might need, like uninterrupted work time, to put up a sign, because once we're in flow, when you're interrupted, it's really challenging to get back in it. But that really, I mean, the foundation of supporting yourself is around understanding boundaries, internal boundaries and external boundaries. So an internal boundary for myself is I'm going to get up from my desk and take a lunch every day from 12 to 1. I'm not going to work through lunch because I need to meet this perceived obligation of hustling. So it's building in, I don't look at emails on the weekend. So those are internal boundaries you set for yourself. You stick to them because they support you. External boundaries are about how others treat you or what you need. So if you're asking your boss, can I have uninterrupted work time from 9 to 11? So it's just known that if somebody needs something, they'll shoot me an email because I'm going to, you know, check that after lunch or whatever. But it's starting to be okay with saying no to something that is maybe not your responsibility, but you're the one that they go to because they know you'll say yes to take on additional work. Well, that taking on that additional work often is at your own expense. And so it's starting to pay attention to the idea of like, why was I hired? What is my actual job? And so the essential functions of why I was hired that's going to move that needle, that's where my energy goes. And so once I'm able to put all of my energy there, I can really maintain or understand my capacity so that I can maintain it. If I have space, I can take on more. But until you get that baseline, when you've been taking on all this additional work or completing marginal functions, which are just time sucks that really don't move the reason that you have been employed for your specific capabilities in that role, we lose sight really quickly of that and take on those perceived obligations because we want everybody to be happy around us. And so it's
an ADHD thing too, is that people pleaser thing, especially when you have some RSD associated with it. You don't want anybody to reject you or feel negatively about you.
Absolutely. And it's we can intellectualize, you know, the idea there's no possible human realistic way to meet everybody else's needs and expectations, that it's just unrealistic. It's setting a standard for yourself that you'll constantly be putting yourself in jeopardy to try and meet that.
So, and when we talk about the people pleasing with the ADHD and the RSD and all that emotional regulation, again, that time to process, that going back into that space and reflecting is helpful. What are some other things that we can do in the workplace to help accommodate ourselves that might not be a very big deal at all, but might be a big change for us?
I think with ADHDers, in general, is finding the structure that works for us. So creating routine in your day that you can be flexible with, but ultimately you're taking the mental load off yourself to plan, prioritize, when you know that every day I come in and these are the first few things that I do. And every day after lunch, this is what I do. And so it's, if you're holding meetings, having a set meeting every week or whatever that looks like, because you ultimately don't have to do that coordination piece. So it's taking away the things when you institute these rituals that you just don't have to carry.
Well, you know, that makes me think of, like, I've worked with a couple of clients and they've had like just a huge thought shift when we start to talk about when you're writing a routine. The routine doesn't have to be necessarily time oriented, right? It can be sequential scheduling rather than I'm going to do this from this time to this time and this to this time, saying I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this. Because you always know then that's the next thing I'm going to do. And clock watching is very difficult for us, right? So you might just do a sequential schedule rather than a time one, unless you have meetings that you have to be at or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And time blocking is something that works for some people. And personally, for me, I can block as much time as I want on my calendar, but I will ignore it and not do the thing if I'm in flow on another project. And so I totally agree. It's just understanding what works for you specifically and making that a part of your routine. And so,
and that brings up that other point, you know, because everybody ADHDs differently, right? And it affects their work differently. And so being a boss with people with ADHD, you can't make a blanket assumption of what it is that that person needs, which brings in that communication even more. But you had mentioned that coaching is something that some people do use as an accommodation at work. What is the benefit of coaching for an employee and an employer?
Yeah, it is a mutual benefit to both the employee and the employer to support that employee to build skills. And ultimately, it starts with assessment. It's giving them an opportunity to have a self-assessment to really look at things that they typically wouldn't see as patterns. And where are the patterns? Where is the friction? What is the heaviest? Where is procrastination? And it's usually once you're able to reflect that back, there's so much clarity around systems that they can create for themselves that alleviate those challenges.
So the coaching would help you figure out in the first place, what are your roadblocks, right?
Yeah.
Before you can even start working on how to get around them or accommodate them, what is going on?
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, we coach the whole person, right? So they could have very specific things happening at work, but often it's just, you know, underlying parts of you that come to the surface where you can identify potentially self-limiting beliefs that that are a roadblock, resistance to reality and inability to accept. And this is so much of the work with clients is that I educate them on their brain and what ADHD is in terms of their cognitive development so that they can accept their symptoms. If I can accept that I am terrible at managing time, instead of fighting or always wishing it was different, giving all that energy to that resistance, that's going to keep me stuck right there. Mm-hmm. So if I can accept, I just could care less about time, then I know that that's a problem and I have to build in some scaffolding, right? What's going to build me up, support me? And so it's, certain things that I apps on my phone or assistive technology that I can utilize that is going to support me through those challenges.
Well, another one I always ask my clients when they say they have time management problems is I ask them how many clocks they have. You know, so many people, they have a clock in their kitchen, right? And some of them will have like a clock in their bathroom. And I'm like, you need a clock for every room.
Yep. An analog clock.
You have to be able to see time passing in a visual way.
Yep. Yeah, digital clocks do us no good. Especially kids coming up need to have analog clocks. They need to see time as tangible. Mm-hmm. And if you have an iWatch, I think iWatches have an analog function on them that you can see it that way. It's being kind to yourself and it's accepting that this is a challenge for me and being kind to yourself. You wouldn't tell a friend who experienced a challenge that they should be able to do it differently. They should be able to do it easily. And so it's just learning to talk to ourselves that way and take away, it's restorative to hold that energy for other places in our life rather than beat ourselves up about our ADHD.
Well, and I have a question for you. As far as if I'm a supervisor and I see one of my employees struggling, and I suspect that they may have ADHD, but they've not disclosed to me, what could I do to help that person without having to have an ADHD conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a beautiful characteristic of a manager to notice their employees' needs. But I think just a direct conversation is that I'm noticing this. How can I support you? I mean, that, and it's too bad because you just see that a lot of managers, it's not built in, the amount of space and time needed to be a good manager to your team is not built into their role. And so sometimes that feels like it's they're overextended if they have to be that for their team. But that's the role of a manager.
Absolutely. And so when you have an employee that, you know, has been late on every report they've submitted in, you know, the last 6 months, you don't have to say, you know, what the heck's going on, but how can I support you? What do you need?
Yeah. And deadline. So with a neuro-inclusive culture, typically there, if I know my employee has challenges with deadlines, it's okay. What do we need to support that this is turned in by this day? So whether that's regular check-ins weekly to talk about progress, status, but then it's giving them small steps to that deadline, as well as that kind of accountability, body check-in or body doubling almost check-in to help them be successful.
Well, and some supervisors would say, well, that's a lot of extra work for me.
Right.
And what would your response to that be?
Just as I said, is that in the role of leadership, they have a moral responsibility to their team to be able to support them.
Can I
and
add
what,
something
what
to
does that,
that
look like? Sure.
Do you want your reports turned in on time?
Right.
You know, and if this person does great reports and, you know, does a good job with them when they get them turned in, do you still want those great reports, but now on time?
Yeah. And that's the conversation about accommodations and flexibility is extending timelines. If I know that they do great reports, but they might need either another employee to do a component of that report, or they need just an extended timeline, it's like instead of fighting reality on their needs and not accepting it, right? Because that manager is just going to be frustrated and stuck in that. How do we solve this? How do we negotiate in a way that we get to a solution that works for everybody? The manager is able to have the report on time and the employee is successful in meeting that.
And I had a client who had a similar situation. She oftentimes was getting projects turned in late, very detailed, very excellent projects and reports, but taking too long to get them done. And after doing some exploration through coaching and really looking at the situation, it came down to, because she didn't have an absolutely clear idea of what needed to be included in the report, she included everything, right?
Yeah.
Just, I'm going to put everything in there. And so what we ended up doing as an accommodation with her boss was that her boss would give her specific instruction of what needs to be included in the report, and that she would only include those things in the report, nothing else.
Beautiful.
Totally changed the whole report process for her.
Yep. There's so many times where it's ambiguous what the expectations are. So going back to those overarching themes for all systems is that direct, concise, clear feedback and setting those standards and expectations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if an employee doesn't know what the metric is of an expectation for their success, how can they meet that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it came back to that communication thing again, you know, just having that clear, open communication and having her be able to advocate for herself and say to her boss, well, if I had a clearer understanding what needs to be in here. I think that would be helpful. And the boss was like, yeah, I can do that, you know, no problem.
Right. Another thought that came up in that report generation is ADHDers lean towards perfectionism. Mm. And so when you deal with some of those kind of like all or nothing or conditions that need to be met before I can deem it acceptable to turn in, sometimes that changes the time frame it takes to complete things as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about how many things I did to accommodate myself without even realizing it. Because if my supervisor asked me to complete something, a lot of times I would give it to her in what I consider incomplete form, right? Like, there could be more in this, but I would give it to her before I started adding other things to see what she had to say feedback wise, because it might be enough, right?
Yeah.
So I would be like,
work changes the world.
It does, you know, so I'd send it and I'd be like, is this what you're looking for? And if she said, well, I'd like more of this or this or that, then I would add more. But otherwise, you know, she'd be like, yeah, this is great. This is exactly what I need. I could have spent another 2 hours on that report or whatever, but by saying, okay, I'm just going to give it to her and see what she has to say first, that kind of took out that need to make sure I had everything in there and it was perfect.
Yeah. 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 And it's ultimately starting to build up this muscle that monitors what's going on for us.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just being right there in that moment, which is really the place that we are, is right here, right now, is being able to look back, monitor, evaluate today, and plan for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about strategies around communication, both sides, employer and employee, open communication. Talked about a couple of little simple strategies like putting a sign on your door or having clocks in your rooms or getting some more time on a report. And as an employer, we've talked about how they can be receptive and open to doing these things and understand that just because it's invisible doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's invisible. Are there any things that you can think of strategy wise that you're like, for both employers and employees, that you would say, if nothing else, you might want to give this a try?
Yeah, I think bottom line is self-care, taking care of yourself. Employers, employees, all humans need to start. I think of it as like the maintenance light on your car. When things start to feel off, it's like, have I been taking care of myself with those basic human needs, which don't need to be earned? I don't need to perform and achieve to a point where I can finally allow myself to sleep or eat or whatever the story is I'm telling myself. And then, you know, building in space to your work life, your regular life, to invite rest in, having boundaries on both sides. All of those can take care of us in a way that preserves our energy to give so much more. And so for both sides of that coin, the employer and the employee, and it's not them versus me, which often the environment puts both of them in that position. It's being able to look at it in a different way, that we are both on the same team and we're looking at this as the challenge together.
So when you work with companies and clients that are dealing with work situations, what do you think is probably the most common thing that causes real issues in the workplace?
A lack of education and unconscious bias. So, because that's what's designed the systems that are, you know, the box that is really hard for the neurodivergent thinker to fit inside of.
So not only coaching would be helpful for the employee and the employer, as well as training, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Education.
So yes. Would that be considered an accommodation if they decided that they wanted to do a training for leadership in a company about and around ADHD? Would that be considered an ADA accommodation?
I don't know if that would necessarily come out of ADA. So if the manager themselves had ADHD, perhaps. But in general, most companies, organizations have a professional development, you know, an education fund. And so that's where that diversity, equity, and inclusion typically is going to come from likely HR.
So Jen, do you work with people who are trying to maneuver this process at work in coaching, or like, do you give advice and consultation around this? Tell me a little bit about what you provide to help in this area.
I support employees who are looking for reasonable accommodations and a request for executive function coaching. And I also consult with leadership on implementing neuro-inclusive practices, small steps so that they can get to that place of having a neuro-inclusive culture and understanding what that means.
So if we have listeners out there that are going, this is really kind of tweaking my interest here, how do they get a hold of you and talk to you?
They can go to my website, which is stonesthrowcoaching.com. And I have a free consult button, and just reach out, connect, and I can learn more about what you need.
Awesome. Well, Jen, we've covered a wonderful topic today that I feel very strongly about as well. And so I'm really glad that you were able to bring your expertise in and give us some more information. As always, I say, I hope you come back again.
Thank you for having me. I am always a willing participant in this beautiful outreach platform that you've created.
Oh, thank you. So if our butterflies on the wall have enjoyed our conversation and like our content, what should they do?
They should like and subscribe today.
Absolutely. And we'll see you next time.